Again, it is so good to be with you this morning. I thank you for the honor that you've extended to me, inviting me to come and be with you in this gospel meeting. It is my sincere hope and desire that the sermons I have prepared for you are worthy of the effort that y'all put forward to have me come to be with you. There are many parables that Jesus, our King, taught in his ministry here on earth, but I have to personally admit, I believe of all of his parables, my favorite is the parable of the prodigal son. And there's a reason why it is my favorite. I'm ashamed to say, but it is true, I was a prodigal son. There was a time in my life when I left the Lord, and I was not faithful. And I went into a far country and sinned. And as you probably have deduced, I came home. And so as a consequence of that part of my life, this is a very special text to me. So I'm going to begin reading now here. I'm going to read the entire text to you from Luke chapter 15, now beginning in verse 11. Then he said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. And when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. And bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again, was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called out to the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf. But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, lo, these many years I have been serving you. I have never transgressed your commandment at any time, and yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this your son of yours came who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him. And he said to him, son, you are always with me, and all these things I have are yours. It is right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. What I would like to do with you in the sermon this morning is just take this text and simply break it down a section at a time to see what lessons we can learn from this beautiful parable of the prodigal son. I have a question I want to ask you. The younger son, he took his inheritance and went to a far country and lived in prodigal, sinful living. Whose fault was it? Whose fault was it that this boy did what he did? Was it his father's fault? Was it his older brother's fault? I can assure you, it was not his father's fault. And I can tell you from the text how I know it was not his father's fault. Because you can learn here in chapter 15, verse 20 and 21, that his father loved him. And his father had taught him the truth. He says, I'm just going to read what I've underlined here. His father saw him, had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the young man says, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. Okay. What I learn from this is obviously the father loved him. The father, when he saw him a great way off, he ran to him. He fell on his neck. He kissed him. dad loved his son. And his father had taught him the truth, because the young man said, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. So his father loved him, and his father taught him the truth. So again, I come back to the question, whose fault was it? When it says here in the text, and not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. Whose fault was it? I can tell you whose fault it was, precisely. It was the young man's fault. And his fault alone. Now, I'm saying this because, unfortunately, sometimes those of us who are members of the body of Christ, those of us that are Christians, sometimes our own children leave the Lord. Sometimes our own children choose to go into the world and to go into sin. And when this happens sometimes, I cannot begin to tell you how many parents I've seen say this. What did we do wrong? We must have done something wrong for them to be behaving this way. For them to be doing this today, it is our fault. Now then, I have two questions for you. Did you love your children? Did you teach them the truth? If you love your children and you taught them the truth, stop blaming yourself. You need to understand this. We've all sinned. We've all fallen short of the glory of God. Your children are no different. Your children are going to be tempted. They are being tempted, and they are going to sin. Here's the reality of it. And sometimes you need to realize sin is pleasurable. There's a pleasure to it, or people wouldn't want to do it. And they go into the sin, and it's no more complex than this. They like the sin. They think they're better in the sin, and they choose to stay in the sin. It is not your fault that your children choose to go into sin if you have loved them and taught them the truth. The only persons whose fault it was the young man himself. Now then, the text going back to Luke 15, verse 13 says, and not many days after, the younger gathered all together, journeyed into a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. I got a question for you, another question. Why didn't he move next door? Why didn't he move down the street? Why didn't he move in the city that you could walk to? Why didn't he move to a city in the same country? He left the country altogether. And went into a far country, a long way from mom and dad and older brother and anybody who knew him. Why did he go to the far country? I believe I can tell you why. He understood what his intentions were. He understood what he was going to do with his money before he ever left. He was going to go party! He was going to go have a good time. He got a bag full of money, got a belly full of food, feeling good, young, doing fine. I'm going to go to a far country. I got all this money. I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to party. He didn't want people around knowing who he was. He didn't want dad coming up and saying, what are you doing? He didn't want mom coming up saying, son, what are you doing? He didn't want older brother going, what's happened to you? He didn't want people knowing who he was. He went to a world where nobody knew him. Now, there's a very important lesson here. And it's a lesson, I think, that applies to all of us. And that is, when we know we're going to go into sin, and we're choosing it, and we're even planning it, we do the best we can to hide it, usually. Because we know, usually speaking, if you're a Christian, there's going to be people around you out there who know you, and you don't want them knowing what you're doing. So you do the very best you can to hide it. Let me give you some verses on this. I'm reading now from Job chapter 24, verse 15 through 17. The eye of the adulterer waits for twilight, saying, no eye will see me. And he disguises his face. As you go further in the text here, the very bottom of the verse, it says in verse 17, for the morning is the same to them as the shadow of death. If someone recognizes them, they are in the terrors of the shadow of death. And so the adulterer, they already know what their plans are. We're going to go commit adultery together. They're planning for it. They wait for twilight. They want the sun to go down. And it talks about how they even disguise their faces. They don't want people seeing them and knowing who they are and knowing what they're doing. They're doing everything they can to hide their sin. Let's continue with this concept. Proverbs chapter 7 now, 8 through 10. Passing along the street near her corner, he took the path to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. Anybody here ever live in a small town? This is not a small town. You live in a town of 100. That's a small town. In a town of 100, a couple hundred, everybody knows you. And you know everybody and you know what everybody's doing. And so this man is going to this prostitute's house. He knows where he's going. And he is going here when? In the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. He doesn't want people to see where he's going. He's trying to hide it. Now I'm going to tell you something. You can be professional hiders to where nobody knows what you're doing. You know how I know? I was one. Nobody knew me. Nobody. My friends in the church, when I was around them, I acted like them. My friends in the world, when I was around them, I acted like them. I hid my faith from the people that would be offended by it, and I hid my sin from the people that would be offended by it. As a consequence, everybody liked me and nobody knew me. I was a professional hider. The reason I'm saying that is because I kept coming to services. You see, you can be here in the pew right now while I'm looking at you. And you're hiding. You're in a far country even though you're at the assembly. You've left God, you've gone a long way out into the world, and you're living in sin, and you're choosing the sin. It's not something that you're being jumping up behind the tree and all of a sudden you're falling into it. You're planning it. You know you're going this way. You're intending to go this way, and you don't want people to know it. Okay. Let me tell you something about hiding. In Mark chapter 4, verse 22, there is nothing hidden which will not be revealed, nor has anything been kept secret, but that it should come to light. You can fool mom and dad. You actually can do that. You can fool your family. You can fool your friends. You can fool the world. You can hide from everybody where nobody knows actually what you're doing and where you are. But you never can hide from God. God knows exactly where you are. And if you've ever been taught the truth and you know you're spiritually dead, it'll haunt you in your head. Because the whole time you're away from God, you know if I die now, it's hell for me. And you know that. And you can't shake it. And so when people go into a far country, you need to realize, when high school students come to me and I say, I'm graduating, I'm going to college, I go, okay, good. And inside I'm going, oh no, you're going to college. Because you need to realize, colleges are some of the most ungodly environments on this planet. And it was at college where I left God. When I was in high school, when Eddie knew me, I was one of the finest young Christian men you'd ever meet. I was the last person you'd expect to leave. College is dangerous. You're going to find sin like you ain't never thought. All around you. Drugs all around you. I didn't know anybody at Mississippi State that didn't get high. Including the professors. It was so rampant people would walk across campus smoking weed. It wasn't hidden. It was the most ungodly place I ever went in my life. And you need to know that's where your kids are going. It hadn't gotten better. It's gotten worse. The guys had to chase the girls back then. Now the girls chase the guys. It hadn't gotten better. It's gotten worse. And so when I hear young people saying, we're going off to college, I start praying for them because I know they're going into the belly of the beast. They're going to be hit like they've never been hit by false teaching and false doctrines and all kinds of worldliness. And they're going to be tested. And sometimes at a university, not many people know you. You know what you're going to find out, what your real character is, who you really are, is how you behave when nobody knows you. When you are in a far country and nobody has a clue who you are and you're surrounded by temptation, that's when you're going to find out where you really are and who you really are. So let's go further. One of the main lessons that we can learn from this parable, an extremely important lesson, is the way of the sinner is hard. Going back to the text, it says in Luke 15, 14 through 16, and when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine, and he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. All the money is gone. Partying's over. And here then comes the famine. And nobody gave him anything. He is starving. And the last thing any Jewish boy would ever think of himself doing when he's leaving home is, I'm going to end up feeding pigs starving. That's not how he thought it was going to be. No one, when they choose to go into the world and choose to go into sin, think, this is going to destroy me. They think, hey, I like this. This is fun. I don't see the big deal. What is everybody talking about? Why y'all warning me about this? This is not a problem here. I can handle this. It's good. I like it. I'm going to keep going this way. That's the real world of it, folks. He didn't see this coming. He thought it was going to end up good. They always think it's going to end up good. I cannot begin to tell you how many people have told me, I'm better drunk. I'm better on meth. I behave better as a human being when I'm high. I like being stoned. I function better. Yeah, it may start off as fun, but it doesn't take long to when you're on any drug that just all of a sudden you find you're messing up royally and you're destroying yourself and your life. And then drugs go from being used for fun and recreation to running from reality. You don't want to face the world that you've messed up royally. And so now you use the drug to escape reality. And when you start using it to escape reality, you become enslaved to it. And it's your God. You serve it. Look at some verses on this. Proverbs 13, 15. Good understanding gains favor, but the way of the unfaithful is hard. You want to get the most out of life? Just live your life the way God the Creator says live it. I have a gut feeling He knows more about us than we do. He knows how to get the most out of life. He knows how to deal with the different situations. And if you're going to go contrary to the way God says live your life, don't be surprised when it breaks. Don't be surprised when it all falls to pieces. The way of the transgressor is hard. Again from Proverbs 22. It says, he who sows iniquity will reap sorrow, and the rod of his anger will fail. You're going to sow iniquity, there's going to be a harvest. The harvest is not going to be fun. The harvest is not going to be funny. The harvest is not going to be great and joy and gladness. The harvest is going to be sorrow. I used to have a friend down in Arkansas who was in advertising. Do you remember 25 years ago, the Bud Light commercials with the alligators and the frogs? Bud Light. You remember those commercials? Do you know who was the target audience for those commercials? You might think teenagers, college. No. The target audience for those beer commercials were 7 and 8 year old kids. They're trying to get into their minds at childhood that alcohol is funny. Alcohol's cool. Alcohol's good. You go this way, all the girls are going to like you. You'll be a great athlete. It doesn't get any better than this. Over and over and over again, this is pounded into their brain. You need to realize this. If you don't know this, drugs are the norm of our culture today. Your children in school are surrounded by it. In good old Lindale, Texas, you know, conservative South, Lindale, Texas, good old conservative Texas. My children went to high school there. We moved there when they were in the third grade and they graduated. And so in the high school class at the church in Lindale, where I preached for a while, I asked them this question. What percentage of the high school where you go uses drugs on a regular basis? Not just gets high every now, I mean, uses drugs on a regular basis. The answer was 85%. 85% of the entire high school used drugs and got high on a regular basis. Another school about 15 miles away said, in our school it's 90%. If you think Nebraska is different, you need to wake up. You need to realize the world has gotten darker. And drugs have not gone away. They are more prevalent and they are stronger. I want to show you the best verse that shows you the real world of alcohol. And that is over in Proverbs 23. In Proverbs 23, where I'm reading from now, starting in verse 29. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine, those who go in search of mixed wine. There's the reality of it. Now you just think about this. I told you I had a friend that was in advertising. How much alcohol do you think it would sell if they showed you the real world of alcohol? If they showed you a drunk teenager throwing up in a commode? Not a good commercial, is it? No. How about this? A drunk man beating his wife or his children. No, that's not going to sell. Or how about this? Somebody dead with their brain scattered over the highway. No, that's not going to sell. But that's the real world of it. That's the real world of all drugs that people go into. Whether it's meth or alcohol, you pick any of them. Whatever drug it is you're choosing for your fun, this is the real world of it. Sorrow, contentions, wounds without cause. You're hurting yourself and everyone around you. And yet, our loved ones continue to choose these paths. If you've ever had anyone that you love choose to go into a far country, and you know they're in a far country, it breaks your heart watching them destroy themselves. That's the real world of it. The real world of the far country is sorrow. And your life may seem pleasant. You may think you're better, but you're not. You're falling to pieces. You're ruining everything around you. And you're destroying your soul in the process. All right. Going back to Luke 15:13. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. But then when you go over to chapter 15, verse 20, and he arose and came to his father, and when he was still a great way off, his father saw him, had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. I want to put those two verses side by side, because I want you to see he went to a far country, and then he came home. Very simple principle. As far away as he went, that's how far he had to come back. Do you hear that? That's a very important principle. As far away as he went, he had to retrace every one of those steps to come back. The lesson is this. As far away as you go from God, that's how far you've got to come home. And coming home is tough. It's real tough to get home sometimes. It's easy to get out there. But getting back home is a whole other matter. When he left home, he had shoes on his feet, full belly, bag full of money, doing good. When he came home, he had no shoes. He was starving, you remember? He had his way to a far country. He had no food. Nobody gave him anything. And he had to walk every step back starving to death. Coming home, folks, is tough. It took me years to get home. Years. The hardest thing I ever did in my life was coming home from a far country. And I'll explain to you what I'm trying to tell you. When you go into the world, all of your friends are in the world. And all of your friends are partying with you. And everybody you know thinks you're doing fine. They think you're great. They like you where you are. They like you how you are. They want you to stay with them in the far country. They don't want you going home. You know who my worst enemy is trying to get home? My friends. And the hardest thing I ever did in my life was walking away from my friends. I went to Florida College. That's where I really got my faith. I remember driving home from Florida, and when I crossed the Mississippi state line, I broke down in tears. Because I knew what was coming. I left all of my friends. It's the hardest thing I ever did. Because listen real close, you can't hang with them. You cannot stay with them. Thinking, okay, I can handle this. I can stay friends with them and then become a Christian. And I can get home. I haven't got to let go of them. It doesn't work and you know it. So if you've got family or friends out there in the far world, out in the country, out in sin, and they're trying to get home, you need to know this. They're facing a battle like you can't imagine. Satan wants to keep them out there. And he will use all of their companions and their friends to keep them in the far country spiritually dead. Coming home, you have to face every step you made the wrong turn. And every sin that you were tempted with and you gave into it, you need to know this, you're going to have to face those exact same sins and those same temptations. You have to face them again. And this time, you got to say, no, I'm not going to do it again. And I'm not going back into it again, ever. You got to come home. And when you're coming home, as far away as you went, that's how far you got to come back. And so if you are in a far country, you got a difficult journey ahead of you. Going back to Luke 15. But when he came to himself, dropping down to verse 18, I will arise and go to my father. That's one of my favorite phrases, when he came to himself. You ever thought about that phrase? The idea of where was I all this time? Because you come into yourself, it's kind of like he's waking up, like he's been in a stupor, and he hasn't been living in reality, and he keeps thinking, I can make this work. I can't begin to tell you how many people I've faced. I've worked with a lot of folks out there that are addicts. And I can't begin to tell you how many of them I've heard tell me, I can make this work, Wayne. Don't worry about me. I got this. And they ain't got it at all. It's got them. And they are enslaved to it. And they've got to get to this point, and you need to understand this. They have to come to themselves. They've got to recognize where they are and how they got where they are. What I'm trying to teach is a very, very simple principle. And yet it's a hard principle to sometimes accept. No one can come home for you. You have to choose to do it yourself. Sometimes those of us who have loved ones in far countries, we want them to come home and stay home. And we all sometimes think, well, I need to go out there and drag them home. Make them come home and make them stay home. I want to tell y'all a very important lesson just to help you. There's only one person in this world I can control. You know who that is? Me. Just me. I cannot control any other human being on this planet. And when I have loved ones, and you need to know this, I got loved ones that are in four countries right now. And we're waiting for them to come to themselves. And we're waiting for them to come home and stay home this time. But we can't drag them. We can only show people the right direction to go and then encourage them to go that way. I am a cheerleader for a lot of people. On the sidelines, letting them know you're not alone. I will be here for you. I will do everything I can. If you want me to come out where you are, I'll come with you. I'll help you get home. And I'm the cheerleader on the sidelines saying, go, come on home. You can come home, Sam, because in the end, I know this. I can't do it for them. The sooner you learn that, it will help you from beating yourself up. All we can do is show them the right way. And love them and encourage them to come home. And hope that they will come to themselves. And they will come home. And stay. All right. This is my favorite part. That's why I had you read this. Luke 15, 20 through 24. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him, had compassion, ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand, sandals on his feet. And bring the fatted calf here and kill it. Let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive. Again, he was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. There's a reason this is my favorite parable. We can always come home to God. You see, Satan will whisper in your ear when you are down with the pigs, when your life is messed up and broken. He will whisper in your ear, you can't go home now. Not after what you've done. He don't want you anymore. You in heaven? You got to be kidding. Ain't no way. So just stay here. And I told you about hiding. Satan will whisper in your ear, you know your parents are going to find out. You're going to have to face Dad. He's going to have to know the truth. Your parents and your family, everybody love you, everybody thinks you're doing good. They're going to know. Stay out here and hide some more. Die hiding. God still wants you. God still loves you. You can always come home. Doesn't matter how terrible your sin may be, how many times you may have done it. He still loves you. He's still watching the horizon. He's still waiting for you to come home. How many days do you think this father looked at the horizon? He knew his son was out there in the far country. You know he's heard the rumors of the famine. And what's going on with my boy out there? He has no idea what's happening out there. And yeah, sure, when his son came home, I'm sure his body had changed. He was ragged. He was skinny. Have you ever seen somebody that's your family member from a long way off? I do this sometimes. When I'm at the airport, my daughter's flying in. I'm sitting there, and I can tell who she is. 100 yards away. That's my girl. We get up and we go as quick as we can. He knew immediately who that ragged, skinny boy was. That's my boy. He's alive. He ran to him. He hugged him. He kissed him. And when he started confessing all about his sin, okay, I understand you did this. Now let's kill the fatted calf. Put a ring on his hand again. Put shoes on his feet. Put a robe on the boy. Rejoice. Oh, isn't that beautiful? Because the truth of the matter is, brethren, you know how I could tell you that I was a prodigal son? Because I know most of you were too. I'll put it to you another way. We all left home at some point in time. Some just go further away than others. Some don't have as far to go to get home. Okay. But the truth of the matter is, we have all sinned. And we have all fallen short of the glory of God. And as far away as we have gone from our God, every one of us had to retrace our steps coming back. And we had to face whatever sin it was that we struggled with. And this time, choose the right path. And then there's the older brother. I want to read again just from the outline here. Talking about the older brother, he was angry and would not go in. And then in verse 30 he says, but as soon as this son of yours came who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him. He's upset, he's angry because you killed the fatted calf for him. After what he's done, you know what he's done. And here you are rejoicing over him coming home. You do understand who this is talking about, don't you? This is talking about those of you brethren who are good and faithful, who didn't go into a far country. I grew up in Grenada, Mississippi. There was a young lady there who was living in sin in a public way. I was working at the grocery store there in town, and one of my friends called me to the door and said, Wayne, you see that girl over there? Let me tell you about her. And then he started telling me all the filthy things that she was doing in town. And my heart was breaking because I worshiped with a girl. And after time, as you know, sin comes to the surface as it always does. And it brought great reproach upon the church where we were attending the things this girl was doing in the city. And yet one day, she came walking in the back door. I don't know who said it, but I remember hearing it somewhere over the crowd, this word being said. Boy, she's got some nerve coming back here after what she did. I was very young at the time. But I remember even thinking then, well, exactly where do you expect her to go? Okay. You're going to have loved ones, and sometimes they mess up royally. Destroying themselves, breaking their lives, going and doing things that bring shame to them, shame to you, and shame to the body of Christ. Okay, that's the reality of it. But when they come home, folks, and when they're coming back to be made right with God, it's a time to rejoice. Because that which was lost is found. That which was dead is alive. When God is willing to forgive us, we need to be willing to forgive each other. It's put this way in the Galatian letter. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in a trespass, you who are a spiritual restorer such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. If you ever think to yourself, I'd never do that, really. You know what the scripture says, a man who thinks he stands, you need to take heed lest you fall. If you ever think I am above doing those kinds of things, I would never do that. You need to look out. Because it may be you one day who's trying to figure out, how'd I get here? How'd this happen to me? When you finally come to yourself and you realize how far you really are from God, and how much you've messed up your life, and how much shame and pain you've brought to so many people. It may be you trying to get up the courage to come home. And Satan is trying to use home and what they're thinking and saying about you as a reason to keep you out there, away from home. We need to let the brethren who come back to God know we rejoice for you. I don't know if I've got another verse on here. I do. Very good, Wayne. I'm going to read from the overhead because it's not on the sermon. This punishment, which was inflicted by the majority, is sufficient for such a man. So on the contrary, you ought rather to forgive and comfort him, lest perhaps such a one be swallowed up with too much sorrow. Therefore, I urge you to reaffirm your love to him. See what's underlined here? Forgive him, comfort him, reaffirm your love to him. That's something you need to know, and then the sermon will be yours. When someone ever comes forward and they are trying to come home and repenting, yes, I encourage you, go up, hug them, reaffirm your love to them, tell them how proud you are of them. Good, great. But please realize this. Just because they've come home doesn't mean the battle's over. You need to realize that when they come home, they are finally engaging the battle. The battle is going to continue as soon as they leave the building. If you think Satan's going to leave them alone because they've come forward and repented, you're greatly mistaken. As I told you, it took me years to get home and stay home. It didn't mean that I didn't come forward. Oh, I came forward. You could have put my name on the front bench. I came forward so many times. The problem was, I had to leave the building. I had to go back in town. And when I go out of the building, there's my friends waiting on me. Come on, Wayne. Come on. You know what I'm talking about. So when they come forward, don't think the battle's over. The battle is finally being engaged. And they're going to fight it as soon as they leave the building. Soon after they're out of here, Satan's going to hit them again. And you can go forward in the evening and sin that same evening. How do you know? I know because I did it. I'm trying to explain the real world of being a prodigal son to you. So you'll understand where your loved ones are and what is involved in getting them home and helping them stay home. If you've ever worked with addicts, you know what I'm trying to explain to you. They are enslaved to it. And you may think, okay, they're home. They're going to stay home. This is good. Okay, that's great. And boom, they're back. And your heart breaks. What do? You go after them again. You try to encourage them to come home, and you try to encourage them to stay home. You tell them the truth about their friends. You tell them the truth about what they've really got to do to put off the old man. And then you try to be cheerleader. Remember the cheerleader on the sideline encouraged them to stay home, stay home. I'm here to tell you that some of the finest Christians I know, some of the most outstanding Christians in the body of Christ today, were prodigal sons and daughters at one time. They just don't let people know where they came from. But you would never, ever guess because of who they are now. God still loves us. He wants everyone to be saved. And even though your sins may be as scarlet, the blood of Christ is there for us. God is willing to forgive us. He still wants you. And you can go to heaven still, even though you may have messed up terribly. Even though you may have sinned terribly, God will forgive you. You got to come to yourself, though. And you got to come home. Because nobody can do it for you. I told you earlier, you can come to services and be in a far country. The reason I know that is because I did it over and over. I didn't stop going to worship services. I used to call them guilt whippings. Because after I left, I felt so guilty. If you're hiding, you may be able to deceive everybody. But you know the truth. And God knows the truth. Come home. You have family here that cares for you, that loves you. They'll pray for you. They pray with you. And they will do the best they can to encourage you to stay home. I tell folks this. I'll get down into the trenches and I'll fight for your soul. And I will not leave your side. I will stand beside you till the Lord comes or I die. We need to learn to be there for one another. And so if this is what your needs are, if there's sin between you and your God, go straight into it, confess it to God, turn from it, and the blood of Christ will cleanse you. And as I said, hopefully your family here will be there to encourage you. If you haven't obeyed the gospel and you honestly believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, come forward and confess your faith and repent of your sins. We'll be glad to assist you and baptize you into Christ. If you are subject to the gospel call in any way, let us know while we stand and sing the song that has been selected.